Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verses 1 to 10. Tonight we'll look at 11 through 20, the last half of this chapter. We all understand the Bible was not originally written in chapters and verses, but chapters and verses do tend to help us as points of reference. Some of the great passages of the book of Ecclesiastes are actually coming up in chapters 11 and 12, particularly chapter 12, when you hear the conclusion to the whole matter. But what Solomon is doing in the book of Ecclesiastes, he is addressing youth, and likely not necessarily teenagers, though it would apply obviously to teenage youth. We look back in chapter 9, I believe it was, in verse 9, where he says, "Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all thy days." So this is a young person who is married. So if you put the two concepts, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth, and live joyfully with the wife whom you've married all your days. So you're looking at what would be young families, a book for young families, which would again apply to a great deal of detail to just youth in general. But think about what we've already studied. The first 10 verses, and I'll not go re-preach these again, we talked about little things, doing the little things, making sure you pay attention to details. You know, like dead flies and the ointment makes it stink. So a little folly goes a long way, as we say. Well, tonight, I want to talk about walking the talk. You ever been around someone that does a lot of talking about something? Going to do this, going to do that, but never does it. A lot of talk, no walk. The child of God is to be consistent in what he believes and what he says he believes and what he does on a regular day-to-day basis. Maybe you've ever heard the expression, walk the talk. Don't talk the walk, walk the talk. But let me give you a couple of other expressions that sometimes we use. How about talk is cheap? You ever heard that? Talk is cheap. In other words, you can sit around and talk about something all day long and it never get anything accomplished. And how about this expression? This one was given to me years ago when I first started preaching, as it had to do with business meetings. Business meetings is where minutes are taken and hours are wasted. Minutes mean the minutes, the record. Minutes are taken, hours are wasted. I don't know if you've ever been a part of that, but it can be quite interesting to watch, you know, what goes on in a meeting. That's not to say that all meetings are non-productive. All kinds of meetings have to be communication and getting things planned and organized and so forth. But if we don't walk the talk, talk is cheap, isn't it? And talk all day long. So what we want to do in these sections is look at this last section, 11 to 20, in three parts. Not three equal parts, but in three parts. First of all, we're talking about productivity. Okay? Doing the little things, concentrating on the little things, avoiding the little things that can create problems like dead flies in an ointment. So we want to be productive in our lives while we have our life. And we want to be not just productive in our talk, we want to be productive in our walk. So it's walking the talk here. So look at the first verses, verses 11 through 14. We'll read them and then we'll discuss some points out of it. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. In other words, without a charmer trying to charm it, as it would have been in India. It says, and a babbler is no better. King James, a babbler. In other words, a person, literally the Hebrew word there means a man of words, a man of tongue or lips. In other words, he's a master of using his mouth, and he has a great vocabulary, but that's about all you'll know about that person because he never puts into practice what he says. Verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. Notice the contrast. Babbler, wise man. Wise man is not just a person who talks. His talk has productivity with it. But then, of course, the contrast. But the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. In other words, have you ever heard the expression, open mouth, insert foot, up to the kneecap? Okay? In other words, you said something you probably wished you hadn't. Okay? Swallow himself up. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness. Of course, this is the lips of the fool. The end of his talk is mischievous madness. mischievous madness. Okay, we'll come back to that in a minute. Verse 14, finish this section out. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? Okay, which is by way of rhetorical question. You can't talk to a fool. He thinks he knows everything. Okay, so let's go back and not so much look verse by verse, but look at the concept of a whole. He's dealing here with quantity of words and quality of words. By the way, I've heard great sermons that would last hour and a half, 2 hours. And by the way, there's a difference between having to say something and having something to say. There's a great deal of difference in those two. You think you understand that. Okay? So, just because a person has a lot to say doesn't necessarily mean what he says is of any value. Sometimes something short is of greater value than anything long. When I was studying U.S. government in high school, 12th grade, we're talking about filibustering. Filibuster. Well, that's one of those vocabulary words I had to learn. Well, what a filibuster basically is here is a person who takes the floor and doesn't want to yield the floor and is just going to talk and ramble about anything under the sun to delay, actually, the vote on the particular item that this person doesn't want the vote to take place. So, he just goes on and on and on and on. As a matter of fact, they said in Congress, there were certain congressmen that could go on for almost a day or day and a half. Just take the floor and just keep on talking. Everybody else gets up and leaves and goes out or comes back. You still stand there talking. Won't yield the floor. So, they called it filibustering. Okay? Talk your way through it. I remember a friend of mine at Fried Hardeman, and I won't call his name, because he's still alive, and if this gets out, obviously he would be embarrassed by it. But he told me, and I was the best man at his wedding, he told me that one day he did not do his homework. And the teacher always we had in this world lit class always asked about your homework assignment. And she'd go around, all right, why did you not turn your homework assignment in? And he would always say, he'd ask her the question, how are your grandchildren doing this weekend? And he said, the next thing you know, she would ramble for 50 minutes about how great her grandchildren were, and do you want to see the pictures, and let me tell you the latest on them. And by that time, class was over, and she says, oh, well, by the way, since we didn't get around to what we were doing, make sure you get your homework in next class, which would be every other day, because it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday class. He said, see there? You don't have to do your homework. Just get her off the subject, and class will be over before you ever discussed it. He said, You people do your homework. I didn't have to. I was going to get her off the subject anyway. Is that slick or what? You say, that's pretty wise. Well, ultimately, she would get around to, by the way, your homework is due. Okay? How many of you have ever known anybody to talk themselves out of something? Yes, police officer, I realize that this is, you know, unlawful, and that's why you pulled me over. But you see, here's my problem. Here's my situation. You surely are going to be merciful. Surely nobody's ever talking themselves out of a ticket. Okay, out of a traffic ticket. Or they've talked themselves out of the doghouse or whatever the case might be, guys. Okay? Here's a serpent. It will strike even if not irritated or, as it says, enchantment. Even if a person doesn't do anything to stir the snake up, that snake will bite. And by the way, to me, as the old expression goes, a good snake is a dead snake. Now, that may not be true with you. It's not true with Pam, but true with me. I know God put him down here for a reason. But the concept is a babbler or a person who is going to talk and never do anything productive is as good as a snake that will bite you even when not provoked. By the way, neither one of those are good, right? And what kind of words does he give? He gives mischievous. Madness is the end of his words. In other words, I got a plan. It's going to make this church great. By the time you get through listening to the plan, it's going to make the church so far out here in the world and make the church like the world won't even know the difference between the world and the church. By the way, that can happen all the time among people. to use this model and that model instead of the Bible model. And so then the production is what? Oh, we're moving in a direction, but is it the direction that we really want to go in based upon the model of the Bible, particularly the New Testament church? Then he talks about a fool being full of words. So there's a lot of warnings here, right? Warning signs. A lot of words, a lot of talk, a lot of plans, a lot of filibustering, a lot of things that have to do with my way, this is my direction, this is the way I want it to go. By the way, we just got through a political segment, right? We got about 2 years before we get into another one. Does this sound familiar here? You know, I'm going to clean up Washington. How many has ever said that? When I get to Montgomery, Montgomery's going to be clean as a whistle. How many have ever said that? And then all of a sudden you find out what? Vote that rascal out just like all the other rascals out. Okay? It's like a snake that'll bite you. A babbler is no different. But the wise. With the wise is gracious. Gracious. He carries with the idea of to give the grace of God that is found in Scripture. In Acts 20 and verse 32, when Paul left the Ephesian elders, likely for the last time, says, you'll not see my face. He said, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up, to give you an inheritance among all of them that are sanctified. I commend you to the God of heaven and to the word of his grace. Now that's wisdom, isn't it? That's real wisdom. When I'm dead and gone, what are you going to have to sustain you on down through your work? You've got God, and you've got the Bible. You've got your New Testament. And that'll sustain you all the way to the end of your days. Okay, let's go now to point number two. Verses 15, 16, 17. Not just this warning about words and the wisdom that can come with good words. We talk about work ethic. Having a good work ethic. Watch this. The labor of the foolish wearies every one of them. Them there is the foolish. The labor of the foolish wearies the foolish because he knows not how to go to the city. He doesn't know how to go to the city. Well, there's the city right there. Just keep walking. Oh, he doesn't want to go to the city. Well, who's in the city? Watch the next verse. Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child and thy princes eat in the morning. Now, that's a weird expression, isn't it? By the way, don't you want to eat breakfast in the morning? But that's not what he's talking about here. In the sense of when you wake up, you get your blood sugar up by a meal, and then you can have the energy level to tackle your day. Woe to a nation, to a land, whose chief ruler is a child. When Josiah was 8 years old and became king of Judah, that should have told that nation something. How many of us would like for an 8-year-old child to be in the White House? Be Speaker of the House. How would we like for every Supreme Court justice to be 8 years old? Someone said, man, what would the world be like? It looked like Toys R Us. Isn't that right? It looked like the playroom at my house. I was talking to Levi the other day. He spends the night at our house almost every Friday night. I said, how old will you be in next time you have a birthday? Seven. By the way, the next year is what? I said, what will you be after that? He said, 8. Josiah was just 2 years older than Levi Clark. I cannot imagine Levi Clark being the king of any country. By the way, he thinks he's king of the universe, his own little universe. But I can't imagine in 2 years my grandson, our grandson, having dominion over an adult world. Well, I've got a problem. I need to go talk to the king. And you walk in, and there's an 8-year-old man. And he's not even a man. He's a kid. He's a child. By the way, he did reform the nation as he got a little older, but that 8-year-old king had to have some assistance. Okay? By the way, at 16, If you read the record of Josiah, you will find of him that that's when he set his heart to start cleaning out the temple and to set things back in order like what his daddy and granddaddy never would do. As a matter of fact, they made a mess of it. That would be Manasseh, Ammon. Manasseh, one of the wickedest kings of Judah ever to have walked the planet, ever walked in that land, reigned for 52 years. By the way, aren't we glad we got term limits? 52 years, the wickedest ruler on the throne in Judah. And just in a small matter of time, after he's dead, an 8-year-old takes the throne. An 8-year-old. What in the world have we got now? We've gone from a wicked man who reigned for 52 years to an 8-year-old. Woe to the land when a child is your king. On top of that, when the princes or the rulers sit and eat in the morning. Look at the next verse because it explains more about that. The verse before it, verse 17. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son, in other words, a child now, but an older child, of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength. Why do you eat? For strength and not for drunkenness. Now, when you put 16 and 17 together, you get a better picture here. The princes that were eating in the morning, what were they doing in the morning? We got to eat a hearty breakfast so that we can go out here and give 8 hours of good hard labor. You know, 8 hours work, 8 hours pay, you know, day's wage, as it were, for whatever the contract was. And then we can sit down at the end of the day and eat that meal and go to bed so that we can relax. No, what these rulers were doing when you have a child as a king is we don't want to hit a lick at a stick. We don't want to work at all. As a matter of fact, any work we do just wears us out. We're just weary. Even when we work, we don't really produce anything. So the best thing we need to do is, you guys work while we eat. You guys work while we eat. And that's what the land is said to be full of woe. Better to have an heir on the throne, a son of a noble person, which would be of royalty, the son of the noble who has been trained, he now is of age, that when the heir apparent now takes the throne and the rulers that are working under him, they're eating for strength to be able to do the day's job. And they're not eating so as to be what we call the fat cats or the people to live off of the blessings of other people's labor. Okay, so woe here and a work ethic. By the way, let's just think about everyday life and jobs. I was talking with a member of the church not long ago. He's in the funeral home business. Good friend of mine here in Limestone County. And he told me about his child, his son. He said, I work pretty hard. Matter of fact, I got long hours in this funeral home business. You never know when you're going to get a call in the middle of the night. And you get up and you go get the body and then you got to prepare it. You got to make sure everything, the arrangements are made. And then if you've got 3 or 4 deaths all of a sudden, hey, it's almost like you're not punching a clock because the funeral's going to be in 48 hours. Sometimes less than that, sometimes a little more than that, but around that ballpark time. Says his son told him, he said the other day, I don't intend to work all my life as hard as you do. That's a quote. I don't intend for the rest of my life to work my life as hard as you do in your life. I'm going to get a job where I don't have to work quite as hard as you do, and I'm going to have an easier and better life. He said, my own son told me that. He said, if my son is typical of other people's children in Limestone County, in the United States of America, he said, we are in trouble. We're in trouble. What is this generation? What's my generation? was a generation above it. Work ethic. By the way, for some of you that work for the Japanese or some of these Asian countries, far like Korea and so forth, they got a work ethic. How about Daryl? You work at Toyota. They got a work ethic. They expect you to have a work ethic. What made this country great? Was it everybody's entitled to whatever it is I hear? In England, they call people that don't want to work and yet want to be subsidized by the government, they call it being on the dole. D-O-L. The dole. Or maybe it's misspelled. D-O-L-E, maybe. Be on the dole. In other words, if I can get money from the government without working at all, what's the real point of working, period? And there are people who will do that. I'll give you another example. True to life example. There was a member of the church here who worked at a company in Huntsville. And this person said that a friend of theirs decided that as an experiment, they were going to take off a day of work, call in sick leave, and they were going to dress like a homeless person. Literally, whatever that is. They're going to get them a cardboard sign. They were going to find a major intersection in the city of Huntsville, Alabama. They're going to stand out there all day long with that cardboard sign, begging for donations. And just see if you can make any money at that. And the guy said, "You're kidding, right? You're going to come to work." "No, I'm really going to call in sick. I want to see if this works." Now, you're curious about the rest of the story, right? The account. Again, the idea, foolishness, work ethic. Person's got a good paying job, has to work a full 8, maybe 10-hour day. Guy dressed in some of the roughest clothes he had. Probably didn't shave. Who knows what his appearance looked like outside of, you know, what he was wearing. Took his little cardboard sign, you know, need help, you know, work for food, work for anything, whatever the case might be. Of course, nobody's offering him work. They just give him donate. He come into work the next day. He said, you weren't working. "I did what I told you I was going to do." "Well, how did it go?" He said, "Listen to me." He says, "I made more money yesterday doing what I was doing on the street corner of Huntsville, Alabama, than what I would have made yesterday if I'd come into work. And guess what? Because I called in sick, I'm going to get that too." He said, "You're kidding." He says, "I kid you not." Now, people that practice that kind of life, do you think they're beating the system? What kind of productivity is that? That's what makes this country great. That's what makes churches strong, right? That kind of mentality. Woe unto your land if this becomes your lifestyle, if this becomes your thinking. Now, let's look at the last part, 18, 19, 20. Actually, these are three different paragraphs. If you look in your Bible, King James Version puts a paragraph sign besides each verse. So it's a different thought, though they are connected. So what I call this is wastefulness and wealth. There is a sense in which wealth is important. And then watching the attitude as it's manifested in the words. Verse 18. By much slothfulness or idleness, some translations say, the building decays. And through idleness of the hands, the house drops through. Okay, let's stop right there. How much money do you think is invested in the residence in which you live? If you got it paid off, how much did it cost you total for your residence? What if you don't maintain it? You don't maintain any of it. Just don't cut the grass, if nothing else. Just don't cut the grass. Don't worry about the hinge getting weak or you see something slipping. Just don't maintain it at all. Just live in it and just go about it. Don't clean anything. Don't wash anything. Don't tighten up any screws. Don't do that. What do you think that house is going to do? One of the most amazing things that I remember about Mother and Daddy's house on 103 Penny Place in Country Club Estates down here in South Athens. When Mother died, it took us about a year, a little over a year, to sell that house. Nobody lived in that house for a year. Nobody. So either Phyllis or myself or one of our family had to go down there to that house and check on the house. Had to cut the grass, had to keep the shrubbery up. By the way, you're trying to sell it, right? So if you're trying to sell it, guess what you got to do to this place, though nobody's living in it? You've got to maintain it. Well, I got my own yard to cut. Yeah, and you've got that house's yard to cut too. By the way, that just goes with the territory. You go inside the house, nobody's lived in it. Did you know that a toilet will get dirty? Absolutely get dirty by itself? Nobody living in it. It'll do it. Do you know what bookcases will do? They'll get dirty too. Nobody's living in it. You would think, well, since nobody's messing anything up, nobody's living in it. It will go down. It'll go down. Just do nothing. Your automobile will do that. Take your automobile, go park it in your driveway, and don't drive it for the next 10 years. If 10 years is in the future, then go back 10 years and look at your automobile. By the way, in the South, we put them up on cinder blocks, don't we? And let the grass grow up on the side of it. Or take an old lawnmower of yours and say, well, it's run. I'm going to go get me a brand new one. Just take your used lawnmower, stick it out in the side of your yard, and just leave it out there. Leave it out in the elements. Or stick it in your garage, you know, cram up the space. What do you think no maintenance will do to anything? By the way, neglect your health. It'll go away too. Neglect anything that's worthwhile that you need to maintain. Neglect your marriage. They'll go away. Neglect time with your family. They'll go away. Neglect the church. It'll go away. Neglect your relationships. And they'll go away. All you got to do, slothfulness, idleness, the roof will fall in. Like this building right here is almost 2 years old. I mean, well, actually, a lot of these structures are older, around, well, a little over 2 years, right? We'll be in it almost 2 years when we get to December. Let's just say, no, we're not going to maintain any of this for as long until the Lord comes back. We're just going to continue to use it and do what we're doing. By the way, Libby, don't carpet it. Don't sweep it anymore. Don't vacuum anything up. We're just going to let it go, girl. By the way, she doesn't drive her nuts, probably, in the business that she's in. Don't pick up after anybody, by the way, Libby. What you see in the pews that everybody leaves, you know, the wrappers and all that, just let it go. Let's stay. By the way, my garbage can in my office, don't even worry about that. I'm just going to keep piling stuff in it. Bathrooms, just let them go. Just let it go. How about it, guys? Y'all ever seen somebody's great place all of a sudden just go to pot? Maintenance. That's what he's talking about. Don't do the maintenance, you might as well pull it down to the ground. Because it's not made to be eternal. And it will go away if you don't tend to it. Then verse 19, a feast is made for laughter. By the way, a good time, laughter. Then he says, wine makes merry, but money answers all things. Everybody wants to have a good time, right? I remember when I was at Freed Hardeman as a student. There were students that went to Freed Hardeman, did not go there to get an education. They went there to party. By the way, Freed Hardeman's not one of your typical party schools, but there are a circle of people. If you got a popcorn machine and a hamburger maker, they'll wear your door out. Guaranteed. Particularly if they need to burn the midnight oil and you got a coffee pot, They'll drink all the coffee you can make for them. They're freeloaders. I remember having a hamburger maker in my room. Sometimes I wanted a hamburger, and the cafeteria wasn't serving hamburgers at that time. So I just bought 3 pounds of ground beef, had a little mini refrigerator, made my own personal hamburger. By the way, boys' dorm, half-inch patty hamburger cooked in the room. Where do you think the smell of that hamburger went? Went down out my room, down that hall. Guess who's walking by that hall? I got the door locked. You're cooking something in there, aren't you? Well, yes. What are you cooking? I'm cooking a hamburger. You got another one? Sure. Can I have one? You got a dollar? I'll be right back. Next thing you know, go down to their room. I give them the burger I was cooking for myself. They give me a dollar. I just make my hamburger in the room. Let me tell you something, guys. I didn't have to buy any more hamburger meat the whole time I cooked my hamburger. You know who paid for my hamburger meat? They did. I got free hamburgers, except for the buns and the ketchup. So I got free hamburgers. By the way, when a boy's hungry, he'll pay $5 for a hamburger if you push the price. I just charge him a dollar. What is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. And I invented something. I wasn't breaking the bank. I wasn't breaking the system. But I knew one thing. I knew that money can answer some problems. Now, if a guy wanted something for free, I wasn't going to have that. I'm just going to charge you a dollar. I'm going to give you this hamburger. Now, you want it bad enough, you give me the dollar. By the way, you could go down to the grocery store, buy 5 pounds of, it wasn't ground chuck, but ground beef. It wouldn't cost like $5-6. Now, you make a lot of hamburgers out of 5 pounds of ground beef. And what's the point here? I want a good time. I want to have fun. I want to stay up all night and play Rook or Spades or whatever. I had guys in my dorm that do that. By the way, I'm thirsty. You got anything in that refrigerator to drink? By the way, you got any snack foods? I'm hungry. Well, yeah, I do. Here, get them out. You got a dollar? A dollar? Yeah, you got a dollar? I had to buy that. I had to pay for that. Oh, come on. We're Christians. You're supposed to have... You got a dollar? Oh, you're just being stingy. No. You just want to be a freeloader. By the way, and they own Christian college campuses. Sometimes when I would drive from Freed Harbor and I'd go either to Phyllis's or sometimes I'd go home, they'd say, where are you going this weekend? I said, I'm going to see my sister or I might be going home. They said, does she cook? I said, well, yeah, normally she cooks. Mother cooks. Can I get a ride? Can I go with you? $5. That'd be the gas money you would pay to get you and me back from school. Phyllis can remember this. There were kids from Child Haven who would want to come back to Child Haven on the weekend. I would come to Decatur, two girls from a dorm, Scott Hall, or one was in Scott, I think one was in Hall Rowland. And they needed to ride, so we'd ride to Decatur, and someone would pick them up, and they would pay me money, gas money, by which to get them back to school back and forth. By the way, I'd take it. Now, I'm not making money off them, but here's the point, folks. We're not here in this world to abuse people's generosities, are we? Have you ever had someone do something for you and you knew it cost them something? And I always tell my kids, always told them, if somebody does something for you, a service that does cost money for them to do that, even though they don't say they're going to charge you, at least, listen to me, at least offer to pay them. You got that? at least offer to pay them. They may turn it down, but at least you offered. Is that a good policy for a young couple starting out? Does that build good relationships? You're not taking advantage of someone's generosity. They may give it to you for free. But the fact of the matter is, to build this concept of gimme, 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 take, 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 that'll destroy a nation. That'll destroy a church. That'll destroy every relationship you'll ever have in this life. If you don't do anything else, how much do I owe you? You ever ask somebody that? Somebody does from you, now how much do I owe you? You don't owe me anything. Oh, now come on, I know you. It cost you something. No, I wasn't going to do it if you were going to have to pay me something. This is okay. Well, I thank you for that. How about that policy, folks? I think that's just pure common sense in the South, isn't it? At least offer, if nothing else. Money answers all things. You got to have money to survive. You got to have money to function. And even everybody else does. Okay? Don't be a freeloader. Last verse. Curse not the king. No, not in thy thought. Curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which has wings shall tell the matter. By the way, this is an exaggeration. It's a figure of speech. This don't mean that birds understand your English and they're going to talk in English to someone out here. It gets back to them. Curse not the king, not in your thought, nor the rich in your bedchamber. In other words, in a very, very secret place where you think it's never going to be heard or told any other side. As a matter of fact, the Bible condemned cursing the ruler of your nation, period. Old and New Testament. Now, we may not agree with some of the policies of certain people in political positions, but the Bible teaches we are to pray for kings, rulers, for all that are in authority. God put them there. God put them there for a reason. I don't know what now why they're in there for a reason, but they're in there for a reason. And whatever that is, that's God's business and not mine. Here's a person in authority. And the next thing, let's talk about this person over here, to this person over here. And well, you didn't tell me not to tell so-and-so. You didn't say what's to be kept in confidence. And the next thing, that person that you told this person, and that person, and ultimately it gets all the way around and it gets back to the original source of the subject matter. By the way, and your sins and my sins will find us out. Well, it'd been better I'd never let that come out of my mouth. Bingo. Correct. Correct. Don't be wasteful in your time and in your energy. Understand the nature that you have to use money to survive. Don't let people take advantage of you. And be very careful with your attitude. Because, by the way, what the attitude is will slip out of that mouth if not careful. So what are we looking at here? Let's walk the talk and not talk what we would regret in the walk. If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, we're here to encourage you to be that. Believing that Christ is the Son of God, repenting of sins, confessing your faith, being baptized into Christ. We're here to assist you in that. If you need to come back to your first love, Tim, Larry, and I are here to assist you. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing.